Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing three equities, and to do that, we're joined kindly by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Good morning, John. Good to be back.
So we have, as usual, three equities that we're going to be discussing. But before we do that, let's just touch on the general market, the wider market and what's happening and touch on some of the biggest themes. And I think today, Alan, it would be appropriate to take a quick look at IPOs and especially a couple of IPOs that have taken place today. I mean, the most high profile one, of course, is going to be Coinbase, which we'll touch on, but just a note that we've had one here in London in Mast Energy Developments. Now, this is a spin-off of Kibo Energy. Kibo Energy did an IPO presentation with UK Investor Magazine some weeks ago now in the run-up to that. So they IPO'd at 12.5p. That was the price that initial investors got, and they're trading now. Just looking here, it's 15p to buy. So a good result there for investors, you know, looking at a nice gain there. And also for the broker Clear Capital Markets, they were instrumental in pushing this forward there. So it's good to see a company there that's very much involved in moving forward the infrastructure of electricity generation in this country. They're specializing in reserve power plants, which are there to provide backup power, basically, as we move towards greener forms of energy. And there could be downtime in the grid, and their system is there to back that up. So an interesting company there, and definitely one that's done well for investors in the first day of trading. So, Alan, Coinbase, we've been discussing NFTs recently. We've been discussing Bitcoin and obviously a number of companies listed here in London. But I mean, what's your feeling on this IPO? I mean, my personal view is we could see a bit of a buy the rumor, sell the fact, in as far as we've had the build up over the last few years in the interest in Bitcoin. We're now at a stage where it's going mainstream. With such a large and high profile IPO, it is of course going to attract greater regulatory scrutiny going forward. And in my view, that undoes some of the benefits that Bitcoin offers, and it being sort of easy to transact and isn't part of the major financial system. But if it starts to become, some could argue that it does lose that that appeal, and it just becomes like any other currency. There will be thousands, maybe millions of people that have a differing view to me, and I'm not saying the price is going to go down, but I think things could change to some extent. What would your feeling be on this, Alan?
Well, I think as with other stocks that have exposure to Bitcoin, I mean, you know, we're seeing Bitcoin blasting to new highs, and some analysts are now saying it's going to be at six figures in terms of valuation by the end of the year. And given what it's done already, that's, you know, that's, although it sounds fantastical in some regards, I suppose when you consider there are a finite number of Bitcoin, 21 million Bitcoin can only ever be made, as it were, or mined. So it's a finite asset. So once it's done, then the valuation will continue to rise. So any stock that has exposure to that movement, and of course, you know, Coinbase will no doubt hold its treasury in treasury in reserves in Bitcoin. So you've got exposure to that market. And I think, you know, I don't think people are going to care about whether it's bringing decentralized finance into the mainstream or into mainstream finance at all. I think they'll just be happy, A, that a company like Coinbase is getting mainstream exposure, across mainstream financial markets, and also B, that it has the exposure that it does to Bitcoin. I mean, we're seeing little IPOs over here. Obviously, Mode floated last year. We spoke about Mode DLC, and they have a very good app, and their treasury is held in Bitcoin too, which has done fantastically well. We spoke about Argo Blockchain, and look where the valuation's gone. The shares were 3p last year. I think £2 hit a high of £3.40, now £2.90. So, you know, that's the excitement that drives these stocks. So if the stock has an association, if there's a connection to it, and obviously Coinbase has its treasury assets in Bitcoin and probably Ethereum and the other major cryptocurrencies as well, I think there's everything to get excited about, and I'm sure it'll do very well.
Yeah, I mean, Coinbase comes at a time when, obviously this is over in the United States, but there's been, you know, a series of high-profile IPOs in the United States and here in the UK. Of course, very recently we had Deliveroo. It was actually a record quarter for the London Stock Exchange in terms of IPOs. It was the best quarter in the first quarter of this year since 2007 for new issues onto the market. I mean, Alan, looking back over history, we tend to see IPOs and a flurry of IPOs when markets are getting towards highs. And of course, just last night, we saw record highs in the United States. Unfortunately, we're not yet to get anywhere near record highs in the major indices here in London. FTSE 100 still some distance behind its all-time highs. But I mean, with those sort of stats there that we're seeing from the London Stock Exchange, with a company like Coinbase, which is alternative finance, you know, moving into the mainstream, taking advantage of this optimism around the markets and jumping on the back of a number of other IPOs, does it sort of give you a little bit of concern that we are getting to a point where things are getting a little bit frothy, where there's been a lot of money thrown about, and this can typically be a situation that happens just before we see a bit of a sell-off? Is that a concern there, or do you think when we're looking at the overall economy, we're opening up because of COVID, and this time around you wouldn't be too concerned with what has been an indicator of a top of the market in previous cycles?
Well, for me, Jonathan, I'm not too worried about it, because I think what's happening is the focus on IPOs and alternative finance companies like Coinbase coming to market takes up some of the slack, obviously, from the traditional sectors, retail and leisure and travel. But of course, as we come out of COVID now, and I'm just seeing here, EasyJet has said today that it expects to start flying into Europe from late May, and obviously British Airways will be spearheading a European travel recovery as well. So these stocks will recover too. So if anything, there are going to be drivers pushing the markets higher. And if some of these IPOs don't quite live up to expectations, I think there's still support from other sectors in the market to offset that. So arguably, if the IPOs go well and we see a recovery in the travel and leisure sector, the FTSE is going to break back through 7,000. And who knows, we may even see it test all-time highs towards the end of this year. But we've got a long way to go first. But I think the IPOs are a positive sign. And given where we are now, given that many of the leisure and travel stocks are really in recovery mode, I think the recovery in those will offset any potential upsets from the IPO sector, from the new IPOs.
Indeed. Very interesting area to watch. And those two companies that we mentioned there, Mars Energy Developments and Coinbase, do check out the UK Investor Magazine website, because there'll be further information and coverage on both of those new issues for anybody that would like a little bit more detailed info on those. So do check that out.
Jonathan, just to come in here, regards Mast Energy, I will be talking about another company in the space on a I do a weekend research talk on Stockbox Media, and I will be discussing a company called Corcel, CRCL, at the weekend that's also in the same space as Mast Energy Developments. And this is a really exciting sector, so there's an awful lot of interest right now.
Indeed, and I think looking at the Mast Energy Developments IPO today, a lot of investor interest and a good result from them. So, yes, do check out that podcast as well. So, Alan, we're going to be discussing three equities now, and a full disclosure on the first one. I do hold some shares in this. ECR Minerals, ones that we've discussed previously on the podcast. So what's the latest update from them?
Okay, so I will also just declare an interest. I too have a shareholding in the company. ECR Minerals have a portfolio of assets in Victoria, Australia. And the Victoria region is really at the forefront of feverish investor interest regarding gold mining. And of course, there are many British companies involved down here. We have Power Metal Resources and Red Rock Resources with their joint venture, plus other TSX listed companies, Fosterville South and many others. And of course, that region hosts the Fosterville Gold Mine, which is owned by Kirkland Lake Gold. And the shares of Kirkland Lake from 2015 onwards, I think there was something like a 2,500% increase on developing the mine and bringing the mine into production. And it is today one of the most profitable gold mines in the world. It costs about, I think, $300 an ounce to get the stuff out of the ground. What is interesting is that the ore head grades the Fosterville mine, Fosterville work with, are very similar to some of the grades that ECR Minerals have been seeing in their previous drilling campaigns. So ECR Minerals have two primary assets within the Victoria area, and they have a third license application. Well, they have several other license applications in the region, and one license is waiting for approval in Eastern Victoria in the Tambo project. But in Baylaston, they have a number of license areas, the HR3 license, which covers a lot of historical mine workings, the Black Cat license, which is immediately south to a license area which has been applied for by Newmont Mining, which of course is the Australian mining giant, and the grades they pulled out of the ground, as I say, are very similar to the sort of grades that are seen at the Fosterville mine. So it's been said before that Fosterville is a license to print money, certainly the most profitable gold mine in Australia. In addition to the drilling campaigns that are currently being undertaken at Baylaston, the company ACR have interest in the Creswick region, which is directly to the north of the Ballarat mine. This is another producing gold mine, and in addition to several licenses in Creswick, which covers a geological anomaly called the Dimmicks Main Shale, there are other license areas which ECR has applied for, along with other companies, which are closer to central Ballarat. The best sample drilling by ECR produced in 2019 was a nugget, some 80 grams per ton, and they've noted nuggety mineralization in the work they've done there. So what ECR has done, it's gone through a process where it's refined and established the potential with drilling campaigns. Over the past year, it has acquired its own drilling rig, and it has its own drilling team. So rather than rely on other companies to bring drilling contractors in to do the work for them, they undertake the drilling themselves. So there's no delay; they can really crack on with it. But of course, you know, this incurs costs. So throughout last year, the company engaged in fundraising and was very well funded. At the start of this year, there was something like $4 million in the company cash coffers. As we've gone forward, the company had had the option to raise some money at 2.2p that they raise a further £2 million. They took the decision to do that simply because it was very close to the current share price. And of course, that money now means they've got getting over 6 million cash reserves in the bank, and it means they're fully funded for all their activities. What that money's also been used for is a modest expansion of the Bendigo headquarters. They have an operational headquarters in the centre of Victoria, the money now means they can expand that, bring more equipment in, and basically accelerate the drilling campaigns that are underway. So the money's in the business now. ECR currently has a valuation of 21 million. And clearly, once we get to the assay results back, which CEO Craig Brown has promised in later on this month, then we'll know better. We'll have a better picture going forward, and clearly we can see we'll be able to see progress milestones mapped out for the rest of the year. There has been a lot of joint venture interest working with the companies wanting to work with ECR. Several offers on the Creswick project, which are currently being worked through. So we expect more news on that too. But it's a very exciting year in prospect for ECR Minerals.
Indeed. I mean, I particularly will be eagerly awaiting the next update. Of course, I mean, this is a company that should make up the speculative end of your portfolio, but certainly with the projects that they're working on there, there is the potential for some good news coming forward in 2021. So I'm sure one that we'll touch on again, Alan, when we hear more. So one that we have discussed previously, and we probably said at the time that we would touch on again, and we are going to do that today because they have had a recent update from their operations. That's Blencow Resources, Alan. What was the latest update from them?
Okay, so Blencow Resources, I also hold shares in this company too, so I'll declare that at the start. Blencow Resources, BRES, is the EPCO BRES, valuation of 8.5 million. Shares are traded as high as 9.5p on the year, as low as 4.5p, currently is 7.2p. So Blencow Resources, in April last year, we raised £2 million and completed a reverse takeover of Consolidated African Resources, which meant it then owned 100% of the Orem Cross graphite project in Uganda. Uganda, of course, is a benign regime in Central Africa and very pro-mining. Lots of mining companies are operating there. So this the Orem Cross is a vast area. It's estimated to contain some 3 billion tons of graphite, and of course graphite is an important constituent of batteries. I think 60% of the weight in a battery is made up of graphite, and it has a number of other important industrial applications too. It's used in foundries. It's used as a fire retardant, and various grades of graphite, including the expensive jumbo flake graphite, which has been noted at Orem Cross. So all of the activity for Blencow really has been leading up to the announcement yesterday of the maiden JORC resource estimate. Now, of course, the territory is vast. It's some 520 hectares or 2,000 square miles. So it's absolutely a huge area. So you simply cannot go in there and just estimate that the whole region. So what they're doing is they're taking a step-by-step approach, and in the northern syncline, which is one area close to where the base camp has been set up, they have undertaken an estimate there, 16 million tons of 6% total graphite content, and high grade zones, some 3 million tons of 8% total graphite content. And this is near to double the numbers they're expecting to come back with. So very encouraging there from the group. So the next steps now are to undertake a preliminary economic assessment. So the economics of building a mine to get the graphite out of the ground and the other factors can be taken into account. And then the next step after that is a pre-feasibility study. So that's undertaken, and then of course the detailed financials can be established, and then the steps taken to move to production. So the company itself has undergone it raised $300,000 in December, which included $75,000 investment from three board members. That's Cameron Pierce, executive chairman, Sam Quinn, and Mike Ralston. He put $25,000 each in at 6p. And then in January, again, as sometimes happens, you know, in a way to the ECR Minerals position, the company was offered a further $500,000 at 8p and appointed another broker in the process. So the company is well funded. It's also received funding from warrant exercises throughout the year too, as has ECR, I should add. That's also added to their coffers too. So the company is now well funded to undertake the next steps. And clearly once the economic studies and the feasibility studies are undertaken, we'll get a better picture. Meanwhile, they are also going to undertake drilling elsewhere on the Orem Cross project so we can get they can get a better idea. And obviously, as that drilling work increases, then they will add to the JORC estimate for the region. But an exciting time, and clearly, you know, depending on your view of battery metals, you know, it's an integral part of it. I think Blenkiah at the moment, you know, offers very good value, being valued at just $8.5 million.
Yeah, so I mean, Alan, when we're looking at the share price here, we've had a bit of a drop since the most recent update. I mean, do you think that's disappointment from investors there? I mean, were they expecting a little bit more from Blenkiah, or do you think there's you know, a little bit of impatience maybe coming in from investors wanting to see more, a little bit more quickly than the company's moving?
I think it could be warrant sales as well. You know, warrants come into the markets and they're exercised, and then those shares are sold. So you know that can often be a contributory factor. But I think overall, you're going to see a lot of investors will look at this and think, oh, well, I was expecting more to happen. But you have to understand that a project like this goes through a series of steps. You know, just as ECR are doing it in Australia, they're going through the series of steps, undertaking the drilling, proving up the assets, getting an estimate of just what's down there and the quality of what's down there. And then once you've got that, it's all down to looking at the ground, the permits to build the mine, the cost of building the mine, getting the product to market. All of those factors have to be taken into account. And certainly in ECR's case, you know, they're very well positioned in the centre of Victoria, which has extremely good road and rail connections all over. And then, of course, in Orem Cross in Uganda, it's easy to get the stuff to the coast and get the stuff out of the ground. I should also add, with Blenkiah, a lot of the graphite is very close to the surface, so the mining costs, comparatively speaking, are going to be very low there as well.
Indeed. And that, as I mentioned at the beginning, no doubt one that we do mention again on the podcast as we hear further news from their development program then. So, Alan, let's now move on to the last equity that we're going to discuss today. Now, this is a company which, wrongly or rightly, has probably fallen into the basket of being called a COVID stock throughout the pandemic. Of course, there are a number of companies that were in operation, listed on the market before the pandemic, that very quickly turned their operations towards fighting coronavirus. Some of those companies include Novacyt, Synergen, Avacta, and the company that we're going to discuss now in Open Orphan. However, it's quite interesting when you're looking at the shares of these four companies. Of course, anybody that follows Novacyt will know that their shares have fallen off of a cliff. There's been an announcement of a dispute with the government there over the contracts that they had with them. Synergen and Invacta started to move sideways ever since we've had news of the vaccine, because of course as the vaccine comes in, anything that was doing in sort of testing and therapeutics slowly becomes redundant to some extent over time. But Open Orphan, just looking at the chart here, has really, really shaken off. Now, of course, this isn't the company that's operations were entirely focused on COVID-19, but it did lend itself towards the fight of the pandemic. But they have seen a very steady increase, Alan, and just in the last week, we've seen them move to levels that's I think there may even be all-time highs for the company, certainly going back for some time. So what's driving that at Open Orphan?
Well, I'll also declare it as just, you know, I am a shareholder in Open Orphan too. And yeah, I mean, as a shareholder, we've had the most phenomenal run. The shares were, I think, 5p springtime last year. And of course, you know, we've seen the performance since, but with good reason. So Open Orphan currently has a market cap of 293 million. The shares have touched a year high of 48p, as low as 6.5p. So yeah, this time last year, 6.5p. And if you look at the performance over the year, it has just been steady growth. There have been no big sell-offs or big dips. It's just been steady growth throughout, and with good reason. So the company has, I suppose, two primary arms to its offering. It has Venn Life Sciences, and Venn Life Sciences is a contract research organization with great capability, has numerous contracts with major blue chip companies like Ipsen Pharma and biotechs all around the world. And if you look at the news flow for Open Orphan, you will see contract win after contract win after contract win. I mean, in March, Carna Bioscience contract win, Oxford Biotherapeutics contract win, £7.5 million contract win with a US biotech in a human challenge study. And this is just on and on and on. And this is really, I think, you know, investors are seeing the amount of cash and the amount of contract wins that are coming into the company. It's just a relentless series of wins, which has driven the valuation. But that's just one side of it. We then have hVIVO. And of course, hVIVO owns the quarantine center in East London at Queen Mary's Hospital, they've also expanded that and set up a quarantine centre in Manchester as well. And they're undertaking here the human challenge studies, where they're giving volunteer patients a mild dose of COVID and treating them and observing the patient to basically acquire data. And this is what the company does, and it has a huge database of information on patients and clients. Before COVID, Open Orphan was involved in researching rare diseases and assimilating data on those diseases, and of course with its skill set, it was ideally suited to this. And of course, the milestone contract was the big government contract win to undertake these human challenge studies, thought to be some 40 million sterling. So that brought an awful lot of money into the company. Carl Friel, the exec chairman, who's really driven the business all the way through, has promised that the company would make a profit in the final quarter of the year. And of course, we are expecting those numbers very soon for the full year, and we'll get that picture. So I think expectation of that has partly driven it up. But also, the company announced yesterday that it was going to spin off some of its non-core assets. And of course, we see companies do this. In fact, Power Metal Resources, it's in a different sector altogether, but they are going to separately IPO three projects. And I was talking to Paul Johnson, the CEO there, in an interview earlier this week. So Open Orphan are doing the same. One of their assets, HVO001, is a treatment for a respiratory disease. That's going to be spun off into a separate company, Orph IP, I think is the name of the company. And I think that, of course, is what pharmaceutical and biotech companies do to maximize value. Because when you have a range of drugs and treatments that you're developing and working on, sometimes the picture gets confusing for individual investors. So many times these assets are spun off separately so the true valuation or the true value can be extracted. And I think that has largely driven the increase that we've seen in the share price this week. I mentioned data. Also last week, OpenOrphan launched or announced the launch of the Disease in Motion platform, which works on clinical immunological, virological, and digital biomarkers, which basically feed back into that database. And then, of course, that data is put together it provides a very valuable source of information for the pharmaceutical and biotech giants around the world. And that's really the basis for the company, the basis for the growth of the company. So COVID is just one of the things it does. It has the flu camp virus testing set up, seeking the universal vaccine for flu, which is also run at the hVIVO headquarters. And there's an awful lot to the company. It's actually worth going to the website, because then the website will take you through all of the different offerings. But it's a resilient biotech and contract research organization. And I think given the share price performance to date, once these assets are spun off, I'm sure we'll see further strength in the company as we go through 2021.
So, I mean, when you're looking at what they're spinning off here, obviously non-core assets, I mean, do you think that's one of the main drivers that we've seen in terms of the increase in share price recently? And, you know, when they go to IPO, I mean, is this something, obviously it's going to be sort of IP assets there. Do you think this is something that, you know, in its individual form is going to have a lot of investor demand for?
Absolutely, yes. And I think also the reason it will work is because OpenOrphan, the entity OpenOrphan, has been such a success for shareholders and investors. And that engenders trust. You know, the company and the board have a great deal of integrity. So shareholders and investors trust that. And, you know, they'll trust the fact that this asset's being spun off to create further value. And what it will do, of course, it will add further value to the OpenOrphan balance sheet, which is what these spin-offs do, and it's a very strong strategy going forward. We see an awful lot of companies like this listed on NASDAQ, and clearly, you know, there's been no announcement yet in that direction, but I'm certain that at some point the company may seek to do a dual listing. And indeed, the spin-off itself, that it could go directly onto NASDAQ. We don't know yet. But either way, I think the way the company is growing, I'm still sitting on a decent block of shares in the company, and I intend to carry on holding them.
Yes, and as a shareholder, Alan, you'd be pretty pleased to see that, you know, it's something that they plan to do in terms of paying dividends and distributions to shareholders in the future. On a successful spin-off. So that will be a great success story for the company and for shareholders. So, Alan, just as a recap, companies that we've discussed today: ECR Minerals, ticker ECR, Blencow Resources with a ticker of BRES, and just then was OpenOrphan, which trades under the ticker of ORPH. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Jonathan.
So just as a reminder there, we discussed a few companies, and do check out the UK Investor Magazine website, because there'll be further coverage in the form of a number of articles, particularly on Coinbase this afternoon. And there is a IPO presentation on Mars Energy Development. So if you want to go back and have a look at that, given they've just gone live today on the London Stock Exchange. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.